thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. How Chicago police are preparing if President Trump sends National Guard or an ICE strike team to the city. Illinois is also in the president's sights over the elimination of cash bail. We have local reaction. And as NASA prepares to return to the moon, we talk with three UIC students who could be the NASA engineers of tomorrow. First off tonight, Chicago's Board of Education members are facing an important vote. At issue is how the district will fill its $734 million budget gap. The proposal on the table relies on non-classroom cuts, additional TIF dollars, and pushing a $175 million pension payment onto the city. Some board members are supporting the plan, saying it keeps cuts out of the classroom. But others are criticizing it for banking on unconfirmed TIF funding and dodging the pension payment. They say that failing to enact those changes could lead to mid-year cuts in schools. The expected vote comes just one day ahead of a state deadline for the spending plan to be in place. For more coverage on tonight's votes, please follow along on our website. Chicago officials say the city will be ready should the federal government deploy either the National Guard or a strike team of ICE agents to the city, despite there being no official word from the feds that such deployment is imminent. Governor J.B. Pritzker says Donald Trump's threats to send federal troops to Chicago isn't really about the city's crime rate.
You know, this is a part of his plan to do something really nefarious, which is to interfere with elections in 2026. He wants to have troops on the ground to stop people from voting, to intimidate people from going to the voting booth. So take note, that is what this is all about.
President Donald Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, did confirm to reporters that the administration is considering using Naval Station Great Lakes in North Chicago to house federal agents or National Guard troops if they're deployed. Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling says while his officers won't interfere with federal agents' work, CPD will not assist those efforts. And all Chicago police officers will be required to wear their uniforms so that they can be clearly identified. Community members gathered today to remember Emmett Till, who was killed 70 years ago today. He was honored, along with his mother, Mamie Till Mobley, with flowers and a service at the Burr Oak Cemetery in South Suburban Alsip. The black Chicago teen was 14 years old when he was abducted, tortured, and killed while visiting relatives in Mississippi after a white woman accused him of whistling at her in 1955.
The effort of dealing with racism and hate, bigotry, and violence has not stopped. So we must continue the fight and continue to be the change that we're looking for.
Till's death and his mother's decision to have an open casket funeral helped galvanize the civil rights movement. If you're planning to fly for the Labor Day weekend, arrive early and pack your patience. O'Hare Airport is expected to see more than 1.5 million passengers during the six-day travel weekend, up nearly 4% over last Labor Day, and up more than 10% compared to the same weekend in 2019, which was O'Hare's busiest year in history. Friday is expected to be the busiest day of the travel weekend. Meanwhile, IDOT says it will reopen some construction lanes to minimize travel disruption for the weekend, but of course, many will remain. Students at Simeon Career Academy were in for a big surprise today.
Simeon, make some noise!
Chicago's own Chance the Rapper made an appearance at the Southside School to give away $500,000 in grants through his charity, Social Works. The grants will go to Simeon as well as Diet High School, Dunbar Vocational Career Academy, Prosser Career Academy, and Manly Career Academy. Since its launch in 2017, the, quote, New Chance Fund, along with philanthropic partners, have helped support 56 CPS schools with grants which go towards things like upgraded classrooms and equipment, arts education, career exploration experiences, and more. Quite the surprise for those kids. Up next, states that have eliminated cash bail, like Illinois, are set to possibly lose federal funding. A look at the potential impact right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
President Donald Trump signed an executive order this week aimed at ending no cash bail nationwide. Illinois became the first state to implement that type of system with the Pretrial Fairness Act in 2023. That ended money bonds. Proponents say the law is intended to address equity issues. However, the president claims the policy, quote, allows dangerous individuals to immediately return to the streets and further endanger law-abiding Americans. The administration cites cities and states that do not comply with the order risk losing federal funds. Joining us now are former Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox and on Zoom, Clay County State's Attorney Philip Givens. Attorneys, thanks to you both for joining us. Attorney Givens, I want to start with you first, please. So you were one of the 62 Illinois state's attorneys who filed a lawsuit against the Safety Act back when. Do you agree with the president's tactic to withhold federal funding from cities and states that don't comply with his executive order or from cities and states that have abolished cash bail?
I agree with the fact that he's putting it out there and making it a nationwide issue. I mean, I think that what it's in essence doing is making it known that accountability is restored at this point. You know, criminals need to understand that they will be held accountable if they commit crimes. And if it goes to have to withhold federal funds in order to get people's attention and do that, you know, I think it's something that was necessary because crime continues to rise. We continue to have issues with no cash bail. My discretion as a prosecutor continues to be reduced because of this law. So I admire the ability and the action that President Trump is attempting to take with the executive order at this time.
Kim Fox, you've been out of office for just under a year at this point, so of course you were still serving when this was implemented and you worked with it for a while. Why do you think this is something the president is singling out?
I think it's ridiculous. I think this is a political stunt. The cash bail system that we now have in Illinois mirrors what the federal system has. So it is a surprise to hear my fellow prosecutors say that this is an accountability system. The system that we have is very much like the federal system, which does not generally require cash bond. The president right now is doing anything and everything to cause chaos and really highlighting Democratic-led cities. This is political theater, and the risk of taking away federal dollars that could be used to fight violent crime, to make our streets safer, tells you that the president's priority is not about public safety, but about politics.
Philip Givens, what structural issues do you think need to be addressed with the state's Safety Act?
Well, the main one for me is the fact that prosecutors lost their discretion on which cases we can try to have with cash bail. We were able to set certain amounts on certain cases that it didn't matter the dangerousness of it. The defendants would receive $30 per day if we did have a cash bond on them. But the thing about it is people like me in Clay County and in surrounding counties in Southern Illinois, we know our community. We know the people that are being arrested. We know who's a danger. We know what's going on. Our judges know within our circuits, within our own counties. And so being able to hold people accountable in that sense and ask for a certain amount of bail on any case is extremely important. And we lost that with the Safety Act. Now we have to look at what the charge is and try to make a certain way around it. You know, there's certain offenses that are still non-detainable, aggravated battery of a police officer. Concealing a death or concealing a homicide is a non-detainable offense. So if you help someone move a body, but you didn't kill them, you can't ask to be detained if you have no prior history whatsoever. I mean, that's concerning. And that's something that, at least with cash bail, we were able to try to hold someone and had that discretion to determine the dangerousness that way, instead of the legislature just trying to tell us which crimes we can hold people on.
Kim Fox, what is the research, what's the data told you on the impact of cash bail?
Well, one, I have to remind us, I sat here a couple years ago as it was first passed, and there was doom and gloom, crime's going to rise, people are going to take over the streets, the purge was going to happen, and I'm sure my fellow panelists will tell you that the data and the research and the evidence for the past 2 years has shown that violent crime in major cities and throughout the state has declined. And across the country, it has declined. We have shown that people who have been committing or been accused of committing violent offenses are being held in custody, and those who are not have been released. We've seen a drop in the jail population for people who were there for nonviolent offenses and an actual increase in jail population for those who've been charged with violent offenses. So it's been effective. I get slightly frustrated when we're not talking about public safety, but about dollars. And under the old system, someone charged with the very offenses that the attorney just described could pay their way out. It was no guarantee that they were going to be held. What the difference was if they could write a check, they can be out. People charged with murder, people charged with sexual assault, people charged with violent offenses who could write a check could walk out the door. What this law has done has allowed for judges to have the discretion to hold those people and not have money be the factor, rather dangerousness.
Philip Givens, proponents of the act have stated that its purpose was to address an equity issue, as your fellow attorney has just referenced, preventing low-income defendants from being detained just because they can't pay bail. Are there alternative options that you think the state could have explored versus going straight to abolishing cash bail, except in certain instances?
Well, I think the first step is to, we don't need to get a list of what crimes are dangerous and what aren't, and what crimes we shouldn't be able to ask a judge to hold someone. Recently had someone that traveled down in a neighborhood and kept peeping into windows and trespassing, and under this law had to cite them and come back, had to cite them again and come back, and finally was able to at least pick them up for the night, and luckily had a little bit of methamphetamine in a backpack to be able to see a judge. Other counties in that situation, they're going to continue to cite. Under the law, it's inappropriate, in my opinion, and unconstitutional to have the communities not safe in this. Equity has nothing to do with that part of it. We have ethical duties as prosecutors, as Ms. Fox knew when she was a prosecutor, in order to hold people accountable and live for the best interest of justice. Best interest of justice doesn't mean hold someone in jail all the time. Doesn't mean you set a high bond and people can just pay their way out every time. Murder, concealing a body, things like that, those would have been extremely high amounts in my county. No one was going to be able to pay that. If you've got a murderer and you want to hold them under the old law, you still could ask to do that with no bond. But now we have a list of offenses that we have to abide by. It doesn't matter on money or not. It's public safety in this issue.
Just very quickly, when we talk about constitutionality, as my fellow attorney knows, under the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, it says that there should be no excessive bail. So when I hear him say, oh, under the old system, we could ask for amounts that we knew people couldn't pay for, that is actually what's unconstitutional. And the fact that we're using anecdotes about nonviolent low-level offenses and saying, but if only we could get money for them. The system was unfair. The system was not just. And the current system mirrors the federal system that we have right now. And so this isn't about constitutionality. It had gone through the courts rigorously all the way up to the Illinois Supreme Court. This is about politics. This is about Donald Trump trying to use a wedge issue in Democratic-run cities to garner political points. And as lawyers, and particularly as prosecutors, we ought not be playing into the politics of the moment and uphold our constitutional responsibility as it relates to the Constitution.
Almost out of time, and I want to get the
just
reaction.
Just real quick.
Go right ahead.
Can I just add, on the constitutionality, one of the arguments in our lawsuit against the governor is that the legislature didn't properly pass the Safety Act, as the Illinois Constitution held that all persons shall be bailable by sufficient sureties. And throughout the Constitution and victims' rights portion of the Illinois Constitution, that the right to have the safety of the victim and the victim's family considered in denying or fixing the amount of bail. And then the legislature just tried to do it and pass it their own way. So it became political in that sense, because that's how it was passed. It did go up to the Illinois Supreme Court, and I'm not going to necessarily get into how they have been backed, and or some of them had been backed by Mr. Pritzker on their campaigns in order to have certain votes that way. But I don't believe that it's not just apolitical. I still feel that we have a constitutional duty to hold people accountable. And right now under this system, my hands are tied in a lot of sense.
Okay, so we've got about 30 seconds left. Philip Givens, I'm going to come to you very quickly. Your reaction to the president attempting to send the National Guard to Chicago to tackle the crime rate that is falling.
If it helps hold people accountable and it acts as a deterrent against criminals in what continues to happen in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago and helps to restore law and order, right now, we need it.
Kim Fox.
Respectfully, as someone who lives in Chicago and not hundreds of miles away, this is an attempt to militarize black and brown communities. And that is what he is trying to do. This is not about public safety. This is about having the military on American soil police black folks. And it is unconstitutional. It is not within the bounds of the separation of executive powers from the state powers. My colleague knows that. And it will be shot down by the courts. But this is theater and theater on the backs of black and brown communities.
All right, that's where we'll have to leave it. Clay County State's Attorney Philip Givens, former Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, thanks to you both for joining us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back with more right after this. As NASA's Artemis mission prepares to return humans to the moon and establish a permanent lunar base, three University of Illinois Chicago students are playing their own small part to make that happen. The three have just completed a summer internship program at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama, helping lay the groundwork for humans to have an enduring presence on the moon and maybe even one day Mars. Joining us now to talk about their experiences are Raguez Taha, a PhD student in the Civil Materials and Environmental Engineering Department at UIC. Caleb Smith, who earned his bachelor's degree this spring, congrats, and will soon start work on a PhD in the Mechanical and Industrial Engineering Department at UIC. And Yuri Labuka, a Mechanical and Industrial Engineering undergrad at UIC, who's working towards one day becoming an astronaut. Congrats to all three of you on completing your internship.
So
welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Caleb Smith, I want to start with you. So the internships we know were offered through UIC's Center for In-Space Manufacturing. Sounds like a partnership that the school has with NASA.
Yes.
Fairly new collaboration there. What did your NASA internship have you doing?
Yeah, so the main goal for my project was to develop a system to print with lunar regolith simulant. So this is a fancy term for moon dust. So we want to be able to fabricate components and ultimately habitats on the moon. So that was our goal this summer, was developing that system. So I got to work with robotics and lasers to be able to create that system.
Okay, very cool. What was that like? What was it like for you being able to do that?
It was an amazing opportunity. It was definitely very challenging, but I had a great time working with my team. I worked with a team of two and then a mentor as well. And from there, I learned, again, a lot about robotics, a lot about working with moon dust as well, which is a great opportunity.
Moon dust?
Yes.
Like, did you have actual, I know this is a very non-scientific question, was there moon dust, like, from previous expeditions, or you worked with sort of creating something similar?
Yeah, so we used lunar regolith simulant. Okay. So we have taken samples that we've collected from the moon, and we've researched the composition of that dust. And then from there, we're able to replicate that composition utilizing materials here on Earth.
Gotcha. So like moon dust.
Yes.
Exactly like moon dust. Okay. I'm science-y, I know. So, Raguez, I understand you've got a civil structural engineering background. You were initially a little bit hesitant about this internship, not sure if you were the right fit for the program. What did NASA have you working on?
So my work actually aligns with my PhD research. I was hired to process LIDAR data. LIDAR is just a laser scan. So essentially, think of it like sending a light, and then it bounces off of a wall when you get a million points in space. My task was to connect the dots, but make it a 3D model. And so the idea is to create these models so that we can then better inform ourselves of what lunar and Martian space is going to look like. The model that you'll see on the table now is one of the lava tubes that I inspected and created this 3D component for. I can then use my engineering background to study more about it, which can then be used for exploring Martian spaces.
And so this is a 3D printout?
Yes.
Okay.
You can actually see
the
little people. So this is
a
lava
tube. Oh, there's a little
person
in there. I see what that is, everybody.
Yeah, with our scanner, you're going through the lava tube, and it was able to capture some of the people that were on site at the lava tube as well. And so I was able to print them out to show that the scale of what the lava tube looks like compared to the people.
What was all this like for you to be able to do this? Especially, it must have been a bit of a surprise if you were like, oh, I don't know if this is right for me.
Definitely. I was very surprised with how versatile NASA can be. There's a there's space for everybody. And so...
Get it?
There is space for everybody. I would encourage anybody with different backgrounds to pursue opportunities at NASA. And so it was very rewarding to be able to contribute in my own way and take my field and compare it to other fields as well.
Yuri, you've said that you've dreamt of going into space from a very young age.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
I actually watched my first space shuttle launch when I was seven on YouTube. It was STS-129. It's a space, the first space shuttle launch that I watched. And I remember the sound still sticks with me. I remember hearing how crisp the sound was, and I was like, this is cool. This rocket is cool. I want to be like these people. When I take a shower, it's like a very common thing that I listen to. It's like I have to listen to the comms because like that brings me so much comfort that you know I've been to NASA before. I know how these how this sort of works, and I can actually know what they're talking about. And it's a very surreal experience for me.
Oh, wow. Have you? I'm trying to remember when they discontinued spaceflight, but have you had the opportunity to see a live launch?
Part of being at Marshall, they're very flexible. The interns themselves are very flexible. I actually planned out with the interns a sort of internal launch party for Crew 11. And you can see the mission patch here. It's a very cool mission patch.
I can see you've got several, which is very
It was a very cool experience to be watching that live and also get a chance to meet astronauts from Expedition 72. That was a very surreal experience for all three of us. Yeah. And Expedition 72, that involved Butch Wilmore, who recently retired, Sonny Williams, Nick Hagg, and... What was the other? Don Petit, one of the oldest astronauts. He's still going strong. I've had the highest respect for these people and all the people that I met with at Marshall.
So what did NASA have you doing?
Personally, the same thing as Raghu, surprisingly, but it's more so towards checking the manufacturing processes to make sure everything was manufactured to spec or within tolerances. And that basically means like, is it manufactured correctly? Is the fault acceptable? And some of the stuff that I've seen over there are actually hardware for the SLS, the Space Launch System, the big orange rocket that NASA's using to go back to the moon. Mm-hmm.
So having had this experience, what do you think is next for you?
I would like to keep going.
Yes.
Yep. Simple as that.
So, I mean, clearly it sounds like you'd like to return to NASA one day. Mm-hmm. What would that look like for you?
It could honestly entail, most likely for me, entail going back to Marshall. And if that's not the case, then maybe try the other centers or go back or go into industry. I just had the realization that, the Starship system of SpaceX, it kind of looks like a modern shuttle.
So, oh, wow. SpaceX, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it's,
so,
yeah.
Well, sorry, I just want to know, because we're almost out of time, I want to know about the two of you. Raghuez, what do you think is next for you?
Yeah, so I will be graduating in a year, fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. I do want to continue in academia, but I want to stay connected with NASA's mission. So I'm maintaining those networking opportunities that I've built and those connections that I've built at NASA to see how I can continue my research and collaborate with them in the future as well.
Caleb?
Similar. I'm starting on my PhD program, so I'm looking forward to working through that and then continue the collaboration between UIC and as well as NASA Marshall Space Flight Center to continue my research.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Best of luck to all of you. Congrats on your summer. Raghwez Taha, Caleb Smith, and Yuri Labuca.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And that's our show for this Thursday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines.